Okay, thank you. Very happy to be here to talk about some work that's been going on over the past couple of years to work on an off-axis experiment using the NUMMI beam for neutrino appearance. I'd like to correct Dave. I'm actually at Indiana University now, no longer at Harvard, but thank you. So I'm reporting on behalf of a large number of people. The what's now called the NOVA Collaboration has produced this proposal, P929 at Fermilab. NOVA stands for the NUMMI off-axis experiment for neutrino appearance. So I'm representing the work of 160 authors from over 34 institutions, or exactly 34 institutions. The spokespeople for the experiment are Gary Feldman from Harvard and John Cooper from Fermilab. So Hayato-san gave an excellent introduction as to the things we know and the things we don't know and the things we would like to know. And essentially, as summarized in this picture, essentially it all hinges on the size of how big this bar is, how much electron neutrino component is there in this M3 state. In addition, we would like to get better measurements of these mixing mass splittings. These coming from solar and these coming from atmospheric and the K2K experiment. This coming from solar and CAMLAND. Things we also would like to know is which one of these pictures should we be looking at? Should we be looking at the one on the left, so-called normal hierarchy, or should we be looking at the one on the right, so-called the inverted hierarchy? And this is one of the physics points where I think NOVA can make a really unique contribution to resolving these puzzles. In addition, we would like to know, is CP conserved and things, and all of this hinges on whether or not NUIs participate in oscillations at the atmospheric scale. So the goals of the NOVA experiment are primarily to first establish that that muon neutrinos convert to electron neutrinos at the atmospheric scale, and we'd like to do that to a sensitivity in this parameter sine squared theta, sorry, that should be 2 theta 1 3, down to an accuracy of about 0.01. We'd like to improve the measurements of sine squared theta 2 3, again, a missing factor of 2, I'm afraid, to about a 2% accuracy. And we would like to resolve, if we're lucky, and if we're not so lucky, contribute to the resolution of the mass hierarchy and using matter effects. And this is, I think, a unique contribution to the NOVA experiment. And we'd also would like to begin to study the possibility of CP violation in the neutrino sector. So how does NOVA propose to do this? Well, one thing is we would like to reduce the neutral current backgrounds to a NUMMI appearance search, essentially by improving the NUMMI beam spectra by going off the axis of the NUMMI beam. This produces a narrow band beam with very high intensity. Second, we would like to increase the detector mass by roughly a factor of 9 over the MINOS detector. And to do that at a reasonable cost, we need to reduce the cost of the detector by about a factor of 3. The detector that we're proposing is a sandwich detector which samples very finely in terms of radiation lengths. You can compare this 1/3 to 1.5, which is using MINOS. What this allows us to do is to see electron showers as essentially fuzzy tracks. And by fuzzy, I mean that essentially per plane they produce 1 to 4 hits and scintillator strips per plane per view. This fine granularity allows the separation of gammas from pi zero decays, both by looking for the opening angle of the gammas and also by separating the conversion points for the two gammas, so we can look for gaps in the event. And good energy resolution allows us to focus on the expected energy region where we expect to see a signal. And again, to enhance this unique contribution for resolving the mass hierarchy, we'd like to go to a fairly long baseline to enhance the matter effect. So the MINOS speaker this morning gave a very good introduction to the NUMMI beam. I just flash it up again. So this is the main injector, which 120 GeV protons circulate in before they're extracted to NUMMI. I show this again just to remind you that this is very close to being a reality. We expect the NUMMI beam to start running for physics very early in 2005. And in fact, most of the components, all the way from the magnets that get us the protons down to our target, our horn, which is being lowered into place there, and our hadron absorber are already in place. And so from the beginning down to the end of the beamline, we're already seeing things take shape. Just to remind you the trick of going off axis, pion decays in the rest frame, everything is completely determined by energy and momentum conservation. Once you go to the lab frame, there's an additional degree of freedom, which is the angle with which you decide to look at the pion decay with respect to its boost direction. If you work out those kinematics, you get a formula for the neutrino energy that looks like this, where it goes like the pion energy divided by its boost squared, multiplied by this angle, theta squared. So when you're on the axis, there's essentially a linear relationship. But as you go further and further off axis, you can turn this linear relationship over. And essentially, by choosing an angle of 14 milliradians off axis, we can get essentially all pions in the NUMMI beam to produce neutrinos of about 2 GeV. Seeing what this actually looks like, if we choose the medium energy tune of the NUMMI beam, this is not the lowest energy option, which Minos will start with, but a slightly higher, somewhat higher energy option. Looking on axis, that spectrum looks like this. And as we progressively move further and further off axis to 7 milliradians, 14, and 21, we produce successively lower energy beams and a fairly sharp beam at about 2 GeV. This is mean energy about 2 GeV and about a 20% width. So it's a narrow band beam with very high intensity. In addition to having high intensity, the high energy tail is suppressed. That helps reduce backgrounds from neutral current events. And this 2 GeV beam is nice because it sits essentially right on the oscillation maximum if one assumes delta M squared in the region indicated by super K. You can bring the problem into focus a little bit more by thinking about what the event rates would look like for such a beam. That's what's shown in this plot as a function of neutrino energy, events per kiloton per some number of protons per GeV. The muon neutrino beam before oscillations is shown by this dotted histogram here. Of course, we expect there to be oscillations, and so we would probably be looking at a muon flux more like the solid histogram at the far detector site. If we look at neutral current events and plot them not according to neutrino energy, but according to the visible hadron energy, they would fill up this histogram something according to this line here. There's intrinsic nuis in the beam from muon decays at relatively low energies and from kN decays at somewhat higher energies. And then what we might be looking for is a signal something like this peak here. And so looking at this histogram, you get an idea of what the goals are for the detector. Since most of the new mu's oscillate away, we need only essentially a 50-to-1 rejection factor of new mu's. That's fairly easy, but you would like some safety factor because if the detector is operating at the near site, you won't benefit from this oscillation in getting rid of the new mu components. If you look at the neutral current events, to get that to something at or below the intrinsic beam nu e, you need something like 100-to-1 rejection against neutral currents. That indicates that you want a fine-grained, fairly low-density detector to help separate pi zeros and really resolve the electron showers. And you would like to have good energy resolution, as it's the only handle you have, essentially, to reject this beam nu e. We're looking for a fairly narrow spike on top of this fairly broad background of beam nu e's. So the collaboration has come up with a baseline design for a detector that meets those needs. It's essentially 50 kiloton total mass, 44 kilotons of that being a passive absorber, 7 kilotons of that being an active liquid scintillator detector. The liquid scintillator would be contained in modules of extruded PVC. The PVC would be coated with a titanium dioxide paint to enhance light collection. If you start doing some of the numbers, there'd be essentially 30 cells per extrusion, 24 extrusions per plane, and about 750 planes alternating an XY readout. So these would be giving the Y readout, these would be giving the X readout. We expect to read out on only one end, and so we'd be reading these planes out on the left, reading these guys out on the top, and then reading planes oriented along the X direction off on the right-hand side here. Multiply all those numbers together, you get something which is just over 500,000 channels. The detector technology that we're looking at this is wavelength shifting fiber going to an APD readout, and the absorber, which seems the most cost effective, is a particle board, which is commonly used in house construction. just to mention, this is what an actual stack would look like, showing the particle board stacks with the slots where the scintillator modules would be inserted. To give you an idea of what this looks like, again, these would be the scintillator modules, so there'd be essentially 30 cells going along this direction. These would be essentially 15 meters long going along that direction. The wavelength shifter would go down in a single cell, loop back, and both fiber ends would be routed to an APD. Because we're doing single-ended readout and we would like good light collection over the entire length, this looped system plus the APD gives a really excellent response over the entire module. That's what's shown in this plot here. As you look distance across the module, out to 15 meters, the APD signal, even at the farthest end, is about 42 photoelectrons per muon crossing at the far end. And so the single-ended readout looks like it should work just fine. In many ways, the key to the detector performance is these avalanche photodiodes. These have very high quantum efficiency, 85% shown here as a function of wavelength compared to PMTs. And this is scintillator output here. But they have very low gain, and so we expect we'd have to run them at minus 15 degrees centigrade to achieve a signal-to-noise of about 10 to 1. As it turns out, this log wavelength sensitivity is an excellent advantage for long fibers. And in fact, it gives something like a factor of 2 over conventional PMTs for very long fibers. This shows what one of the devices looks like compared to the rapidly declining American dime there, compared to the euro anyway. And we would put both fibers from a single cell onto one pixel. And some prototype work on the readout board for these things has been started at Fermilab. So here's what events would look like. In this case, I'm showing only one of the two possible views. So here we're looking at the X versus Z view. In addition, all of these events would have Y versus Z views. So you can see muon charge current events, nice clean track with some hadron activity near the vertex, neutral current event, some pions squeaking out of the hadron shower here with the shower shown there, and then the newly charged current where you get essentially a clean track from the proton, perhaps, and this relatively fuzzier track from the electron. So the event selection makes some initial cuts to just kind of divide these based on their grossest features, essentially requiring the number of hits per plane to be, on average, at least 1.5 in the primary track, and that the particle and the track have some correlation with the beam axis. And then after those cuts, there's a likelihood analysis of various event shape variables to try to assess as to how shower-like the event is. So this detector has about an 18% signal efficiency, achieving a new mu rejection factor of about 1,600 to 1, a neutral current rejection factor of about 600 to 1, and a beam nu e rejection of about 12 to 1, based mostly on the energy resolution. So for a five-year run, we'd be looking at about 160 signal events, 44 background events for a figure of merit of 24. And the parameters that go into that calculation are listed down there. We expect to run the detector on the surface, and we can afford to do this because we have a very low duty cycle. The main injector produces a 10 microsecond spill every 2 seconds, which is a duty factor of 1 over 200,000. And so the detector is only live for about 100 seconds per year. So if you work out all the combinatorics of muons being coincident in time and space, we expect that this should be a very easily controlled background. And so we expect to be able to run without a passive shield. We're going to test this assumption with a prototype detector. Although we don't plan to run with a passive shield, we do plan to deploy an active veto shield in the baseline design. A second option that we've been discussing, a totally active detector, would most likely not need a veto shield. This is a second option detector we've been looking at, so-called totally active. It's not quite totally active, it's only 85% active. And the trade-off here is that one can reduce the detector mass by increasing the signal efficiency. It's more or less the same idea of the baseline detector, but without the absorber. But because it's totally active, the channel count goes up higher. And so there's some cost trade-offs here. You don't have the absorber, but now you have more channels. The readout system is essentially the same wavelength shifting fiber to APD. The engineering of this detector is somewhat more complicated because the absorber was providing a structural element for the baseline design. And so some studies of these modules in the vertical, holding oil vertically and holding oil horizontally have been done. And we expect that by forming a laminate of these modules, we should achieve a safety factor of about 20 for this design. But that's still work ongoing. Main advantage of the totally active detector is that the events look really nice. This is a typical event where a new E event produces a proton, electron, and a pi zero. You can see the electron is the fuzzy track, the little stub is the proton, and you can actually see some activity from the gammas from the pi naught decay in this. So the signal efficiency essentially doubles over the baseline detector, while the total mass goes down by a factor of 2, and the signal of background is quite comparable to what we see using the baseline detector. Okay, so where are we going to put this detector? Well, we've investigated many sites in northern Minnesota. Three of them are listed here. The baseline site that we're looking at is this site at Ash River. All of these sites have year-round truck access, power, and nearby towns, and so one can work there. Zooming in on the Ash River site, there are several possible detector locations indicated here, all of which are between 12 and 15 kilometers from the NUMMI beam axis. One of the considerations for locating the detector is to optimize for physics. Here, there's somewhat competing goals in that the largest signal we get for theta-1-3 occurs at a somewhat smaller angle. If one wants to increase the asymmetry due to the choice of hierarchy, that's along this red curve here, one would like to go to a slightly further off-axis angle. However, if one goes too far, there aren't new E's to measure. And so we're looking at off-axis angles somewhere in between those two curves. We are planning a near detector. This is a zoom in on the NUMMI site near just upstream of the Minos detector. So Minos would be here in the near hall. And we're looking at sites between what's called Site 1 and Site 2. What I refer to in the plots is site 1.5. These sites are fairly tight in terms of their space constraints, and so the near detector is designed to be similar to the far detector given the space constraints. We expect that there will be a VTO region plus about 22 planes for a total mass of 120 tons. In one scheme, we might deploy this detector first in a test beam and then move it underground to run in the beam. To give you an idea of what this detector should be doing, this is a comparison at the midpoint between these two sites of the muon rate at the far detector unoscillated. Muon rate at the far detector oscillated is this dashed histogram down here. And this would be the expected muon rate at this near detector scaled by essentially 1 over r squared. That's for muons. If we look at the electrons, there's a very good match to what the electron spectra look like at the two sites in the region of 2 GeV where we expect this signal. In addition to the near detector, we expect the NUMMI beam to be very well studied. Currently, there's a fixed target experiment, E907, the MIP experiment running at Fermilab. This is studying hadron production in the range relevant for the NUMMI beam. That detector is commissioning now. I'm afraid I've lost my pointer. So this should essentially provide direct inputs into the calculations of the NUMMI beam. In addition, we'll have the Minos detector and the Minos far detector measuring the unoscillated and oscillated NUMMI rates on and off axis. And additionally, we expect to have the Minerva experiment running at the near site in the NUMMI beam, measuring the new mu and new E fluxes through quasi-elastic interactions and making other measurements of neutrino cross-sections. And so we really expect to have a good handle on systematics. So one of the goals, thank you. One of the goals of NOVA is to make several improvements on Minos measurements that are targeted. The left panel shows the baseline detector's expected sensitivity for measuring the mixing angle sine squared theta 2, sine squared 2 theta 2 3, and also additionally limits in the sterile admixture. We expect to be able to limit the admixture of sterile neutrinos to below 10%. The measurement of sine squared 2 theta 2 3 is actually one of the real features of the totally active detector. Quasi-elastic events in the totally active detector are extremely clean and has excellent energy resolution. And additionally, there's essentially zero neutral current background to this search. And so we can do a very clean measurement of new mu disappearance. This is what a quasi-elastic event looks like in the totally active detector. And so these are some possible sensitivities or measurement curves from the totally active detector for various values of sine squared theta, 2 theta, 2, 3. And you can see that if it's fairly large, one can measure that to almost to better than 1%. So the main measurement that NOVA hopes to make is measuring electron neutrino appearance, comparing to the existing show measurements, and what we expect to do with MINOS. The NOVA contours sit out here in the range of delta M squares that we've considered so far, and so this is a fairly significant improvement over the MINOS detector. Just to remind you that looking at those plots, one has to be aware that there are several possible ambiguities. Experiments measure essentially oscillation probabilities, and when one relates those back to the physics parameters, there's various ambiguities due to things like the CP phase, in which selection of the mass hierarchy nature is chosen for us. So, for example, if you ran the experiment with neutrinos and measured an oscillation probability of 2%, and then ran the experiment focusing instead anti-neutrinos, and again measuring 2%, one would have a choice of sine squared theta 1,3 values corresponding to these 2 points, and one would also have a choice of the mass hierarchy. If one's fortunate enough to be out here, you can resolve the mass hierarchy. If one's fortunate enough to be out here, you could resolve the mass hierarchy. So in general, to resolve the ambiguities, we can compare the NOVA results with T-DK to break these ambiguities. And we've also looked at the possibility of using a second detector located at the second oscillation maximum in NUMMI. Just a note in the plots I'm about to show, because the sensitivity of the experiment varies according to the CP phase, we quote our sensitivities as a fraction of the CP ellipse that the experiment can cover. And so when you see fraction of delta, it's referring to how much of the circumference of these ellipses is covered by the experiment. So plotting things this way, this is what the sine squared 2 theta 1,3 sensitivity looks like. This is for a detector located 10 kilometers off the NUMMI beam axis. This is for a detector 12 kilometers off the NUMMI beam axis. The NOVA, what we're calling, say, phase one, using the existing NUMMI beam, are these two curves, the red and the blue, red being for the inverted hierarchy, blue being for the normal hierarchy. And just as comparison, the TDK phase one point is located here. If one could upgrade the proton source with a proton driver capable of delivering 5 times the rate of what we're assuming for these curves, they get pushed out to these dotted curves. Now, I mentioned that one of the unique contributions from NOVA is resolving the mass hierarchy. This plot shows what NOVA can do alone in its first phase. So again, this is as a fraction of the CP ellipse that's covered and the value of the sine squared 2 theta 1,3 that's covered, where the NOVA's 2 sigma sensitivity resolution is. And so what one would like is to have as much area in this lower part of the plot here. In the phase one approach, we could cover a range something like this, again, assuming either hierarchy. In this phase two, with the upgraded proton source, that search would extend out to this curve. Thanks. Combining them with T2K, this is, would be starting essentially from the NOVA phase two. Combining with the T2K phase two, we pick up some area up here. And if we were to look at this in combination with the second detector in the NUMMI beam located at the second maximum, we extend that range from the second phase of NOVA out to this curve here, really covering an enormous fraction of the available phase space. Demonstrating CP violation, things the NOVA can do here, again, this is assuming upgraded proton source. This is comparison of NOVA with the TDK sensitivities, and what one can do combining the two experiments, TDK and NOVA, has the possibility in the second phase of each experiment of, again, covering an enormous part of the phase space for this. And so I think the best way to say is that NOVA really extends the reach of the CP violation search. Okay, so maybe I've convinced you that you want to go out and buy one of these. How much do they cost? Well, here's the costing for the baseline detector. It comes out at about $150 million. Again, this is based on a costing model used from the Minos VAR detector, which was recently completed. And these numbers include overhead and about $40 million of contingency. The totally active scintillator detector makes some trade-offs. For example, you don't need an active shield, so you save $4 million. But then you have to go and spend that on more channels for the near detector. So there's some trade-offs back and forth. But the cost comes out quite comparable at $160 million. OK, I show here the technically limited schedule if one were to get all that money today, essentially, or perhaps, let's say 2006. What could one do? We're hoping for stage one approval this month from the Fermilab PAC. And we'll target a final technology decision by the end of the year. Final approval would come at the end of 2005, and then we could start construction, say, in mid-2006. There's really not a lot of R&D to do for this detector. It's based on fairly known technology. Once one has a significant fraction of the detector, you can begin to take data, and then we finish construction, say, in 2011. The totally active detector has far fewer parts, and so it assembles in about half the time, and so you can trim off about 2 years off this schedule. With the totally active detector. So I'll make my conclusions. So the NOVA detector options that I've shown are the baseline detector, which is 15% active, and this totally active detector, which is 85% active. And this totally active detector is looking very attractive. And the technically limited schedule has us taking data roughly in 2007 or 2008. Summarize the physics for each. One comment is that I think many people on the NOVA experiment really think that this provides a very flexible program to study neutrino oscillations at Fermilab. One can build progressively, step by step, up to cover essentially all of the remaining questions in neutrino oscillations. Again, I think looking on sort of the world scale, I think an experiment that has sensitivity to matter effects is really crucial to this problem. So, as I said, we'll find out in a couple of weeks when we can expect to go forward with this. Thank you.
Questions? Yes, right here.
Could you tell us what the status of the proton driver machine not only the funding aspect, but also some technical aspect. You have to change the target. You have to deal with high activity in the material surrounding the decay pipe, and you have a lot of water in this area. Because, in fact, in order to access the physics complementary to the GPRT2K program, you need really the proton driver. And the second question would be, do you intend to run in anti-neutrino mode at the beginning, in order to be complementary, at the beginning with T2K?
Okay, so the first question is the status of the proton driver. The proton driver is essentially an R&D program at this point, and I don't know if the costs of it are really known. I think the NUMMI beam is equipped to handle the increased activity. After we get some experience running with Minos and know essentially what the activation levels are, I think there's large safety factors built into the NUMMI beam. So I think with the existing shielding and things like that, it's not a problem. Your second question, can you remind me what your second question was?
Excuse me. It was related to running at the beginning
the
anti-neutrinos
at the beginning.
Anti-neutrinos.
Yeah, well, that
to be complementary with the GPAR.
Yes, yeah. That, again, you're asking a question about things that are far in the future, and so if the physics at that time indicates that we want to run an anti-neutrinos, then we will do that. But it's something that I think we have time to decide.
Other questions? Okay, if no others, thank Mark.
No, there's one here.
I have a question here.
It's on your picture on the CP violation. Did I read that you were counting on 120, 10 to the 20th protons
yes.
on target, which is far behind the future you showed us?
Yes, that's right. I mean, that is definitely a phase two, and it counts on the proton driver. That 120 protons per year would be 6 years with the proton driver.
Sorry, any other questions? I'm sorry, I have to look around. One back here. Wait for the microphone, please.
I'm not sure it's a question. It's just a comment and perhaps not too politically correct. Can you explain me what ever happened with Adam Parra? As far as I know, this idea comes from him, and lately I see no mention of his name in any context. It makes me worry.
I can answer.
Do you want to take that?
He's working on liquid argon right now. So
yeah, in fact, he's working on a letter of intent for a liquid argon detector currently.
Any other questions? I don't see any others. Thank you again.